This meeting is now being recorded.
All right. Welcome all. Thank you so much for your appearances. In June, I didn't think I'd be saying this, but given the weather, I imagine travel might have been a little bit problematic for everybody. But thank you all for your appearance in the room today. As I've shared in the past, there you go. I feel like I should be saying to a jury, turn off yourself. But anyways, I think if I only could. So the green lights are on. We are being recorded. The meeting is now starting. Again, welcome. I'm going to ask Lucy to go over just a few housekeeping items and take roll so everybody knows who's in the room, and then we'll move on to business.
Judge Conklin?
I'm here.
Judge Barton?
Here.
Judge Bloom? Judge Brazil? Judge Cope?
I'm here.
Judge Earl?
Yes, here.
Judge Herman?
Here.
Judge Heinrichs?
Here.
Judge Johnson? Judge Kaufman?
Here.
Judge Maragonda? Judge McCabe?
Vice President.
And British.
I love you.
It's going to be one of those meetings.
Judge Saunders.
Put more time.
Arthur.
Here.
Mr. Chatters.
Here.
Ms. Fleming.
Here.
Mr. Hamrick.
Here.
Mr. Harrigan.
Here.
Mr. Lewis.
Here.
Mr. Planet.
Here.
Mr. Roddy.
Here.
Ms. Moreau Souls.
Here.
Mr. Taylor. Ms. Ubrin-Kropianko?
Here.
Mr. Yamasaki?
Hi, here.
So there were a couple of members we thought would dial in, Judge.
Do we have any folks, any members dialing in this morning?
No,
all right. I guess not. If by chance you've muted and you forgot you muted, we have not heard from any members dialing in. So if you are on there, please let us know. Before we move to business, did you want to do any reminders?
Yeah, I just want to remind everybody that this meeting is open to the public and is being recorded, and that members of the public can join the call via a listen-only code, and they can join and leave at any time without notice or interruption. If there are members on the phone that haven't yet announced, please identify yourself and members in the room, of course, prior to speaking for the benefit of all participating and listening to the meeting. I think that will do.
Excellent. Great. Before I ask to approve the minutes, I do want to make a brief comment. I know we're getting somewhat towards the end of the term. We are going to have other tick-back meetings before the end of the term, our tick-back terms, and the reason I say that is obviously our population might change, but one member in the room I just had a conversation with, and I do not believe he's going to be able to make the next tick-back meeting before his well-deserved retirement. That's Judge Kaufman. And while Judge Kaufman encouraged me not to comment on that, I'm going to. And thank him very much. I hope he doesn't mind me sharing this story, but shortly after I became chair, I did the typical chair reach out to people and said, how would you like to be involved? And Judge Kaufman told me, and I did what's typical for me, and I didn't take prompt action on it. And Judge Kaufman reached out a few weeks later and said, you're not listening. I really want to be involved in some things, which I got my attention and has come to be my experience with every member of this committee, but in particular, Judge Kaufman has been more than participatory in this committee and in court affairs throughout his career, and we thank him for that. I'm sure and confident he'll get much recognition from his own court for his service, but I wanted to thank him for what he's done for this committee as well.
I know my brother's talking. So if you said that before you were in front of him, you wouldn't be here.
So with that, and that my own personal public comment, if it can be described as that, I would ask for, and assuming you've each thoroughly reviewed the minutes of our May 23rd meeting, for a motion to approve those minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded to approve the minutes. Is there any opposition to the approval of the minutes from the May 23rd meeting? Hearing none, I'm deeming the minutes approved. Next, moving to public comment, I just checked a few moments ago, there is no written public comment, and it's my understanding that there is no request for public comment before this committee today. I know we have some guests and members in the room, which is absolutely appropriate, as far as listening to what this committee is going to do. But regarding public comment, I understand there is no request for public comment this morning. And has anyone, since I've been speaking, joined the meeting? Any members on the phone? Doesn't appear to be. There's a beep. Okay. So I would say if any members join us, let us know, but they won't know that because they haven't joined us yet. So
I would like to acknowledge for the record to the advisory members present.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Patel, Ms. Tidwell, Mr. Wordlaw, and Mr. Theodorovich.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Lucy, very much for helping me with that oversight. So I believe that gets us to the first agenda item that we'll be talking about today, and that's the 2017-2018 trial court allocations for general court operations. This is an action item. It starts at page 7 of your material. I know candidly that, especially with most of you in this room, you're familiar with these numbers. These numbers have been vetted thoroughly. I know there's a temptation to simply move to approve, but I do want to open this up to allow the opportunity at least for Patrick and Suzanne, Patrick Ballard and Suzanne. Suzanne, I always mispronounce your last name. Thank you. To give a presentation regarding these numbers and then any questions that we have before discussion and approval. So with that, I will turn that over to whoever would like to begin.
All right, good morning. I'm Suzanne Wilhuzzi. I'm Senior Budget Analyst with Judicial Council of California. I will be presenting the recommendations in item 1, recommendations 1, 3, and 4, and 6, and then Patrick will be providing the remaining 2 recommendations. So with that, I'd like to begin with recommendation number 1, which is the trial court 2016-17.
And I'm sorry to interrupt, but these recommendations are set forth on page 8 and 9 of the materials.
Thank you.
That's okay.
And a summary of all the recommendations can be found on page 14, which is attachment 1B. Recommendation 1 is to carry on $1.821 billion. In the base allocation, this is a carryover of the ending 2016-17 base allocation with general fund benefits and adjustments to annualized partial year allocations made in 2016-17. And that base allocation can be found on page 20 through 21. So, per government code 68502.5, the council is required to make a preliminary allocation in July of each year. If you look at the summary, 1B, column 6, there are some pending adjustments for the 1% cap, which we will bring forward at the later date once the books are closed. Are there any questions on the beginning base allocation? Pretty standard allocation before.
Any questions in the room about those base allocations and recommendation 1?
And can everybody hear her on the line as well? We can move the microphone closer to the speaker.
And I can talk louder.
So is there any member on the line who cannot hear? Or is there any member on the line, period? I don't think there's a member on the line.
Don't take it personally.
Sorry, my life.
All right. If there's no questions, I'll move on to recommendation 3, which is the WAFM reallocation adjustments. Recommendation 3 is based on council-approved WAFM methodology, WAFM standing for Workload Adjustment Funding Methodology.
Allocation
Funding Methodology. The proposed adjustment for this year completes the approved 5-year phase-in of WAFM reallocation of the historical base funding to 50%. The 2017-2018 WAFM computation reflects updates to operating expense and equipment that was approved by the Council in April 2016. The resource assessment study model from 2010 was used to update the FTE need based on parameters approved by the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee in May 2017. Other updates to figures used in WAFM computation include salary and benefit information as of July 1, 2016. Average filings from 2013-14 through 2015-16, a 3-year average of the O&E from the court's fourth quarter quarterly financial statements, also the same period of 2013-14 to 2015-16, and AB 1058 child support grant reimbursements data from 2015-2016. Attachment L provides more detail on the WAFM reallocation adjustments by court. That begins on page 30. And those recommendations are also found in attachment 1B in column for column recommendation three. At its May 25th funding methodology subcommittee meeting, the FMS recommended that these adjustments be forwarded to TICBAC for recommendation to the council. Do I have any questions on the WAFM reallocation adjustments?
And I know everybody in the room knows this, so I'm just stating this for any member that's on the phone or perhaps any member that's listening in or any guests in the room. This is for the first approved period of WAFM. So it's for those first 5 years. We will have a discussion later on today about any further adjustments of WAFM or any other allocation procedures, but this is just for the previously approved and the 17-18 fifth year, so to speak, WAFM allocation. Further interrupts. Any questions about any of those numbers, anything at all? David?
I don't have a question. I just got an email from a member of the committee who's having trouble with
that. Okay. We're going to pause for a moment. It turns out there may be a problem with committee members calling in on the. David, did you get any other information about that? They just can't. We are obviously in no rush and well within ours, but we're just going to wait for a minute. I want to make sure those members have an opportunity to hear and participate in the meeting.
So Lucy was able to call in using the number, so that was her calling in.
Did the judge share which code she is using?
So we've tested the system and calling in on the information provided to members about the call-in number and the participant number did work. So if you are a member calling in and unable to connect, I'd ask you to look back at the materials provided and double check the participant number that you're using. Otherwise, we'll use David as our fall guy. If you're in touch with Mr. Yamasaki and having trouble, continue to communicate through him. So I want to make sure everybody has a chance to at least listen, if not be heard, on any concerns. So with that, we'll keep moving. Suzanne?
All right. Recommendation four is on the WAFM floor adjustment. That's column four, attachment 1B. This recommendation is also based on council-approved WAFM methodology as it relates to the funding floor adjustment. The detail for this recommendation can be found on pages 39 through 40 on attachments 1O and 1P. There are six courts recommended for a funding floor adjustment totaling $321,000, which then becomes a reduction of $391,000 for the remaining courts. Funding Methodology Subcommittee at its May 25th meeting recommended these adjustments to TICBAC. And the final recommendation I will be covering is recommendation six, which is the Judicial Council Appropriations and Expenses in Support of the Trial Court. This can be found on attachments 1C and 1D. Amount of $13.44 million in programs 140010 and 150095. Yes, Judicial Council and Trial Court Operations Appropriations found on page 1D, and $135.6 million can be found on attachment, 1E, rows 21 through 28. These are pretty standard allocations in support of the trial court, just basically taking last year's allocation and updating it for any changes for those allocations that are impacted by fee revenue, such as equal access and Shrek. Are there any questions? Oh, I'm sorry, an R&E approved these on, recommended these be approved on May 6th. Are there any questions on recommendation 6?
Any questions on those items? Okay, so moving along briskly.
Okay.
Suzanne, that completes yours, Patrick?
Yep. So I'll be covering recommendation 2 and 5. Recommendation 2 is to allocate $4.8 million for employee benefits based on each court's actual costs. So this can be found on Attachment 1B, Column 2. There's a detailed table on page 22. This is new ongoing funding for employee and retiree health and also retirement cost increases. The methodology is based on actual costs. And the total amount that was in the May revise was 4.97, of which 4.8 is for non-interpreter employees, and 174,000 is for interpreter employees. Is there any questions?
I'm sorry to keep repeating myself, but just checking on the line, any members that have called in have any questions? Apparently not, Patrick.
Okay, recommendation 5 is to approve a one-time allocation of $9.2 million for criminal justice realignment costs based on the most current available workload data for post-release community supervision and parole revocation submitted to the Judicial Council pursuant to Penal Code 13155. This allocation is based on each court's percentage of the statewide number of petitions filed and court motions made to revoke and modify post-release community supervision and parole. And again, this uses the most current data that is available, which for 17-18 is January 1st, 2016 to December 31st, 2016. And you can find the table with more detail on page 43, and that is also reflected in attachment 1B, column 5. One more thing, this allocation methodology was approved by the Judicial Council, so it's allocated on a one-time basis every year, but this is ongoing funding to the trial court trust fund. Any questions?
Questions about that concluding item, and I believe that's every item on the first, or every recommendation for the first item. So opening it up to general discussions or questions. So this goes to the council for its July meeting, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
I will make a comment as it relates to this long-term health of the trial court trust fund. It was something that has been discussed with the revenue and expenditure subcommittee chairs. If you looked at the trial court trust fund condition on page 16, attachment 1C, while we have a positive fund balance in the next few years, given a sort of ongoing structural issue, we will eventually have to take action to bring the fund into balance. As it stands now, our current plan is that we are including this structural difference in a budget change proposal as part of overall trial court funding to address this. And the reason that there is this structural difference is because the Judicial Council retained $20 million in the IMF that was historically going to the TCTF as part of a way to cover prior budget reductions. So in solving and maintaining the health of the Improvement and Modernization Fund, we knew we were taking affirmative action, but we knew at some point we would need to be dealing with this issue. And so I just don't want folks to think that, you know, this fund is perfect. It is far from perfect in many ways, but in terms of just the base structural issues, this is something I just wanted to make sure you're aware of. Even though it's on the horizon, I think it's our obligation to let you know that there'll be decisions that will need to be made at some point that we knew we would have to do. We've just been able to, through savings and fund balance, managed to maintain the allocations fully at this point. If there are any questions or issues about that, I'm looking at my chairs of the R&E, wanted to make sure that we didn't miss that in the presentation.
Right. We have talked about it for the last, really, year because we've known it was coming, so it's not a surprise. And you should probably give an update about the subtraction of the MOE offset.
Yes.
That will come from the available fund balance because we do expect, what, a $2.5, $2.3 million miss that will have to come from the fund balance.
Yes, the part of your base allocations are based upon about $48 million coming from courts that have a requirement to deposit into the trial court trust fund from their civil assessments. In large part due to amnesty, there are going to be a few courts that will not meet that minimum MOE level. We said it's projected to $2.5 million. And in order to maintain your allocation fully, we would be using part of the 16-17 fund balance, the unrestricted fund balance of 11.8. We've heard that some of the numbers have taken a slight uptick as amnesty has ended, but we know we're confident that we have the sufficient fund balance given the current projections to ensure that your allocations are fully met for the current fiscal year.
But
it hastens that structural difference by taking, obviously, $2.5 million out of that. So what was shown on the fund condition is maybe an issue in 2021, and you know, it might be 1920. Again, if we had crystal balls, we'd know a lot of different things that we could say for certain. But just again, in terms of the time horizon, we're talking two to 3 years. And to the extent that we don't get the full support on the driver's license backfill, we'll be revisiting the whole structure of our revenues and how they support your allocations.
So can I say that in a little different way so it's a little clearer? meaning that if the license holds go away and we don't get adequate funding to offset the branch's responsibility to pay the MOE offset, we will all take an allocation reduction to fill the
$48 million hole. That is the bottom line. So I want to make it as clear as I could. Sure. This is a problem that we should have fixed a long time ago.
Judge Kaufman?
No, appreciate what Ms. Carter said. I don't really know much I'm going to do or say. I'll just say that this is like at some point we're going to hit bottom. Okay, and some of us are hitting bottom right now based on what we're doing today. And we're at 72% of our needs, all right? And so should we give 72% of our effort to fulfilling the mandatory obligations or not? At some point, your country's going to fail, not because they're mismanaged. They're going to fail because they don't have enough money to function properly. And we have to fix that. Also, I don't think the economic future of the state is going to be that. It's going to be good. I think it's going to get worse, especially when you look at the health care issues coming up, you look at our CDAs are going away, the amnesty. I don't see the future being very rosy, and I don't know what to say to everybody is that I would say that maybe what we're going to be doing is giving more money to the business council staff because we're going to have labor strike because we can't support people who are not doing well. We're going to have to help you to employees raise you. Labor strike. Also, of course, they're going to fail. They're going to have to go into receivership. They're going to have to be managed. I just don't think that at some point we got to stand up and say, no, we can't do this anymore. Every time they cut our budget, we find a way to solve a problem. And it's not good. It's bad. And the bottom line is what we're doing today with this, what we're going to approve, and it's going to be approved, is we have two tiers of justice. Those courts are getting money. They can do it a certain way. If you do not get enough money, we're not going to be doing it. So we have two tiers of justice. It's just not working. For instance, in the Inland Empire, I can't solve your guys' problems. I can't figure out. My budget now goes to $1 million. If I gave you my whole budget, it would solve any of your problems. If I gave you both our judges, it would solve your problems. We have personal problems that we have to address. That's the point of whether or not we're a branch or county. We have all these problems, and all we're doing is kicking the can down the road, and hopefully that the governor and the legislature will do the same thing.
think, and again, I'm now just speaking as a member, not as a chair, but I think Judge Kaufman is absolutely correct. Pardon me, not Judge Carter, but Shikri. It's given us a very concrete example of the effects of some of these cuts. So my perspective, for what it's worth, is we've been doing this job too effectively and too well. We've made it work. We've enabled.
We haven't made it work.
Well, we've enabled the pain to continue because we found a way to keep our doors open. And quickly approaching is going to be closed doors. And what's happened, and again, we have I've tried to build this agenda with plenty of time. We're going to be able to discuss this in the next two items as well as an open discussion at the end of this agenda. But the public as a whole is going to start to feel this more significantly because the courts simply are not going to be able to continue to do this. And candidly, our individual trial courts are now having a perspective from other courts about what they've been going through. So I should probably be parroting back what Judge Kaufman said. But, again, the death of 1,000 cuts is a very appropriate way to put it, and at some point you bleed to death. How's that for the
Yeah. But I don't know what the future holds. I mean, we go to the legislature next year, and we get the same thing, and flat out there's no money. We're not going to get our fair share. And the funny thing is, if we were funded properly, if we were at, like, 90 or 95% of our need, we wouldn't be having this fight. Somebody, the other analogy that's similar, I don't know where it is, the great line is that, you know, my mother taught me that when the size of the pie gets smaller, table manners change. What's happening here is people are going to vote what's good for them and not what's maybe good for the brand. And that's unfortunate, but that's the reality.
Okay. So very appropriate comments. I appreciate that. And on these, on the recommendations themselves, so we've now had a presentation on recommendations 1 through 6 for item 1. Any additional comments, questions, concerns about any of these 6 recommendations? Also acknowledge that Brian Taylor has joined us. So we have another member on the phone. Anybody besides, oh, Mr. Taylor's in the room. There he is. I'm sorry, Brian. I should have looked up. He's here. He's not on the phone. Anybody else on the phone?
Yes, Judge Kaufman, this is Deanda Saunders. I'm on the line.
Hi, Dan. This is Judge Paul Maragonda. I'm on the line as well.
And this is Judge Kevin Brazil, L.A. County. I'm on the line as well.
Okay, so I think that puts us up to almost full attendance. Because Brian,
and I'm Elizabeth Johnson on the line as well.
Wow, we have every member now participating in the room or on the line, except for Judge Bloom, who's apparently in trial. Okay. So recognizing those members that have just joined, and again, Mr. Taylor is in the room, any comments you want to add to any of these 6 recommendations on item 1? Want to make sure everybody had a chance to be heard on these items. Okay, so we've opened it up for discussion of recommendations 1 through 6 that will be going to the council at its July meeting. For comments, concerns, seeing none in the room, do I have a motion to approve all 6 recommendations, either in whole or in part, on item 1?
Move approval.
Move approval of all 6 items, Mr. Yamasaki?
Yes.
All right. Second by McCabe. Again, so the motion is that all 6 recommendations set forth on page 8 and 9 of your material be approved for submission to the council at the July meeting. Any further discussion on item 1 or those 6 recommendations encompassed within item 1? Hearing none, is there any opposition to the motion which has been seconded for all 6 recommendations to be approved? And from that, Judge Kaufman? Judge Kaufman votes no. And would any comment, or is that for the reasons previously stated? We're making it work and we, okay.
Back to my court and
move
to $1,000,006 in 3 weeks and face my employees and say, guess what I voted for?
Understood. Any additional comments? And again, just to make sure, Judge Cope?
I don't think that's true. The fact might vote for this, that I am voting for this, does not mean I'm doing it because it's what's best for Riverside, where I'm from. It's because I think that fairness and equity is what's good for the ranch. And so I totally respect those who are facing these severe challenges that they are. But I don't think it's fair to couch it in those terms. So,
Fisco, I apologize. I got carried away at the moment, and I withdraw that comment. And if I offended anybody, I apologize. I didn't mean that.
Okay. And that's the reason this committee, in my opinion, is so effective, is because we're not shy with each other, and we shouldn't be. So those comments were for discussion in the room, Judge Heinrich?
You may not go right to this motion, but we did have discussions at the funding subcommittee, about some of the issues and trying to find ways to address what Judge Kaufman is talking about and recognizing that we need to work harder from July to October to try to put those into action as far as having like a good idea at the end of the time, but too close to funding. So I think it is still a sad situation that we're not properly funded, but I do think that we are trying to put something forward as well as open it up broader from a more robust discussion about funding and not losing money and having more stability between years. Those were all things that were brought up at the subcommittee.
FMS. Right, and which we're going to transition into, you're absolutely right, the next two items.
So I think the comments that Judge Kaufman made, which have been talked about in some subcommittee, we recognize it and hopefully can meaningfully address it or make it very clear to the legislature what, where we really are with what's going on.
So,
the job in the past, we just haven't gotten action.
So I'll add a comment, and I think from a statewide perspective, what this committee in the past has tried to make so clear is that by voting to approve these numbers and voting to keep our doors open, we are by no means expressing our acceptance of our funding level. So for other branches that are considering the actions taken by this committee, should not be one of deeming acceptance for the funding that we have. We are simply taking those actions from a branch-wide perspective that are necessary to allow us to continue as best we can to serve the public. So with that, any additional comments or concerns about these six recommendations on item one? And I ask if there's any additional opposition. Judge Kaufman has voted in opposition. Any additional no votes? Hearing none.
Judge Johnson votes no.
Judge Johnson votes no. Any additional? Okay, so now I'm going to show two no votes, and the remainder of the members vote to affirm. So therefore, item one and the six recommendations in item one are approved. Okay?
Judge Conklin, if I may, just for a second, I just do want to acknowledge the work of Suzanne and Patrick in picking up this work so ably. I said some courts have asked for the information at the granular level in the spreadsheets, and as expected, no one came back and said there was an error or any mistakes. I'm sure there was some nervousness in publishing these, given the criticality and how important they are to you and what they mean to you as far as, the numbers that you need to plan for. So I do want to just, again, acknowledge their excellent work in picking up a very complicated issue and really continue to support the committee here and the subcommittees in this process so that you're not worried about that. You're still staying in the substance of the discussion. So I want to say thank you to them for that.
Can I join in the same comments, Judge Earl? When I transitioned, helped me understand the importance of finance and their wisdom and knowledge in these areas, and I think everybody on this committee has come to appreciate that as well. We talk about number crunching, and sometimes we kid and we tend to malign that. It's anything but an unimportant task as far as this budget, and I appreciate their work as well.
Thank you.
So with that, moving to item two, on the agenda. Item 2 is set forth at page 44 of your materials, and item 2 is the recommendation of the Funding Methodology Subcommittee, FMS, for the 2017-2018 work plan. This is an action item. Every member, I believe, of FMS is present in the room because as a subcommittee, by definition, they're members of this advisory committee. FMS is co-chaired by both me and Rebecca Fleming, who's sitting next to me in the room. Previous co-chair on that was Judge Kuhl from L.A. Until about a year ago.
Uh-huh.
And then I stepped in because Judge Kuhl termed off. Her work has been previously acknowledged and continues to be, but Rebecca's as well in the room is significant. So as a little bit of background, this is the work plan that FMS is recommending that TICFAC as a whole approve for the 2017-2018 year. And we've had spirited discussions about this, and we've had welcome and appropriate public comments written and in the room about the Funding Methodology Subcommittee work plan. As Rebecca, and I'm obviously going to let her comment as well for any comments she has, we've been receiving emails from folks both on this committee and outside this committee about that work plan and the work to be done. And we recognize it is work that is both significant, but also work that has to be transparent and open, and that's redundant, but available to everybody with all trial courts throughout the state. So that's why we're spending some time today to talk about the work plan, to make sure the work plan is published and everybody's aware of it. It's stated broad, and especially you'll note item 1, plan for the FY18-19 year 6 and beyond. So I'm not saying everybody is aware of this. I talked about it when we started the meeting, but WAFM as approved by the council, and Judge Earl, anything you want to add to this, feel free, was approved for the first 5 years, and we are now there. So 17-18, fiscal year 17-18, which is going to take us to this point a year from now, that's the end of 18 fiscal year, is that first 5 years of WAFM. Then the decision is, where do we go from there? So now starting off 18-19, which seems like a long time from now, but it's tomorrow, is how far out does WAFM go? Does it continue? Does it not continue? Do we need to modify it? And after talking to Judge Earl and Sherry Carter and other people that were in the room, Jake, a lot of people who I'm probably not acknowledging that should be, the discussion was by now, hopefully 5 years out, we're going to have more money, and we're going to be able to look back at WAFM and say, was that the most effective tool, and do changes need to be made? We don't have more money. So we are now confronted with making WAFM work for the next 5 years of the rollout, and that's what FMS is going to take a look at. And we're going to start broadly, but we're going to try to do as much detailed work as we can. And part of that is going to be, for instance, as a start, we are going to have dedicated in-person meetings with members of the subcommittee. We are probably going to meet, and I know they're really excited about this, but we'll probably meet every 4 to 6 weeks in person for the next year. My wife wasn't very excited about that when I told her last night before coming up here. But there's a lot of work to do, and we recognize that, which is why we want to take the time today to talk about this work plan. For any thoughts any of you folks have in the room who are not on FMS about contributions to the work plan and how we make it more effective. So the work plan is set out. There's 12 items that are set forth. There's really no hierarchy to those items. We just had to place a number on them. So that's the general introduction to the discussion. Mike?
I think it's also helpful to let the rest of the committee know that there was a real recognition that to the extent that this work plan might affect WAFM allocations going forward, that the thrust is to get any of those recommendations through and in place earlier in the year than where we found ourselves this year, which was having discussions in May, and that was, you know, the belief is that's way too late for anybody to plan, but really the focus of the subcommittee work needs to be in the July to September, October time frame in order to give people plenty of notice. And I think that's an important one because there are a number of things here that could affect it,
right,
allocation patterns. So I just want to make sure that was in for the record.
It is, and that'll be further addressed in item 3 as well. So timing's everything, and that is there are the council approved and very specific timelines. And these just aren't in place for excuse or procedure. I mean, they're not just rules that somebody said, well, we might as well just throw up roadblocks and prevent people from making comment. Members of this committee, I think, understand we have to work backwards from an end date. We have to look at the date the council is going to take action, actually in July of 2019. And we can't wait until May or June of 2019 to make recommendations. We have to be able to give them information, and Rebecca's going to talk about this too, well before the date they make the allocation decision, that decision they're making in July based upon what we just approved in item one. We have to put in significant work before that, and that the majority of that work is going to occur in those 3 to 4 months between July and October, because then it has to route its way through the system, so to speak, so it can finally be before the council in July of 2019 for final approval of whatever FMS recommends to tick back, and then tick back recommends to the council. So opening up, Sam?
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I wasn't in the room. I wasn't anywhere nearby when WAFM was approved by the council. And just as a member of the funding subcommittee, I would like to request, if possible, to have the language that the council approved available to the subcommittee. That happened in 2013, somewhere along the day.
So when you say the language approved, do you mean the plan itself?
Whatever action
the council report from.
It's in a minute, Sam. It's on a minute.
And I'm told we can distribute that, so we'll make sure that's available at the first FMS meeting and for any member of this committee that needs it as well.
Well, we can have it sent before y'all get back to your desks and offices today. I mean, that's no, we don't even have to wait for everybody to know what the council report that happened in April of 2013 and any subsequent updates, like we had an adjustment process. We'll give you, I mean, they're links, so it's not like we're going to bog your email down with 20 megabytes. It's, the council reports are all there for everybody to see.
David, did you have a comment?
It's a timing question. I don't want to bring it up later or now, so I'll just bring it up right now. I was part of the group of individuals that worked to develop the WAFM funding approach, and I fully support it, realizing that the court with which I was employed would sustain some pretty severe reductions, notwithstanding that. Because something needed to be done. But I also had a privilege, along with, I think it was Jeff Burroughs, of serving on the Child Court Funding Work Group. And that particular entity was tasked with evaluating how Child Court Funding has worked since its inception. And we were able to determine that there were some gaps in how courts were being, or how the judicial branch was being funded. And that somewhat triggered the urging of WAFM development. And 5 years later, basically, we're here looking at the end of the roadmap until it's recrafted. And I wonder if there is a will or desire to determine what has happened. Because WAFM was created at a full clock for in many respects. I'm sure you can go around the state and ask courts, how's it affected you? And you're going to get a different answer. I still support it, okay? But I know that there were some pieces that we didn't anticipate. We anticipated more money, a lot more money. We haven't seen it. We were presuming that no courts would be closing. The courts are. And so I wonder if there is, you know, with all of the positives that we've, you know, been able to experience, there have been some unfortunate activities that have occurred along the way. So I can't presume that that's not important because some courts were closing are now reopening, but there's been a shift in placement. And so, again, I support the WAFM formula, but I wonder if that is something that this particular subcommittee may want to explore because, you know, it's always a good opportunity to evaluate, you know, how things have worked out once you've made pretty significant changes. And where that takes us, you know, I have no idea where it will, but I think it would be a good exercise to find out what's happened.
I agree. And so to answer your question directly, there's two aspects to the way you presented that I see. One is numbers alone. And we have had a discussion, and we are already preparing to answer that question as we begin the FMS work. And that is numbers driven, where have we ended up after 5 years? And it's simple to explain, but probably not simple to actually get in the room. But where did courts start? Where are they now? So if we use and this is an overgeneralization, so I'm only throwing it out there as a generalization. If the goal was, and I know overfunded and underfunded is an offensive term, but I'm using that term because it was part of the discussion. Nobody has sufficient funds. But there are some courts, if we use 75% just as an example, there are some courts that are over 75% and some courts that are under 75%. So let's try to at least bring them close to that range as far as funding goes. Have we done that? So one of the things the subcommittee is going to look at is, with looking back to the people that have the heritage, like the three of you sitting there and others, have we at least gotten close to where we want to be? Now, then the other aspect of that discussion is, well, what's the real-life impact of that? And I appreciate your suggestion, and we'll make – I think that's very appropriate, as best we can, to reach out to courts and say, what's the real-life impact of these numbers upon you? Now, that might be a broader discussion for budget itself, and to be able to say to the council and others, because of what we've done, here's where we are today, and we're either less efficient or more efficient. But I know I'm saying a lot to try to answer your question directly, but we're going to start with the numbers, and we're going to try to start and provide information to those subcommittee members so they understand where we are. Sherry?
Well, I was just going to say, I have not had an opportunity to talk to Rebecca or Judge Clompton about these comments, and they're too far away to kick me, so I'm feeling some freedom. But, now, the 5 years that we've been committed to Waltham were really important for the branch. The governor expected it. The legislature expected it. It was important for us to follow through. But I think at this point, what I would hope this committee would do, because I'm on it, is that we would now start to say, what are some of the elements that need to be reviewed? What are some of the issues that have resulted? So, for example, and again, I'm going back to my experience in the federal court that does have a staffing formula and a funding methodology, and I don't think it's as good in many ways as this one. But what we found on the bankruptcy court side, because they're filing vassalage, is that they needed to have a larger base in their average. So they went from a 3-year average, we then went to a 5-year average, then we went to a 7-year average. It might be that we need to do things like that either in drivers or in the whole thing. We don't know, but I would hope that we would be open, the committee would be open to looking at things like, well, this is a very volatile driver within Waltham. We need to look at what would it do if we used the 5 or 7 year average. Or, you know, there are other things. So my mind is completely wide open. I don't think we should consider, I'm not, and, you know, again, you're the, you know, the people that are driving the committee, but I think we should try to perfect the areas that we see need some adjustment and not be committed to saying it has to look exactly like it does today. And that's where I'm coming from. And I think that, you know, there are a lot of discussions that we can have. Waltham, well, it stopped at 50% historical and 50% workload base. I think we've reallocated 72-73%
right.
of the funding.
Right.
So one question that we might want to ask is, at what point do we have a range? So, for example, it might be that we never go beyond a certain range, up or down, because you want to have a cushion so that if you're within that range, you don't adjust. It's just the outliers. I mean, there's a lot of things to talk about. But anyway, I guess, David, what I'm saying is that I think our commitment to a work-based formula is critical for the branch, but my mind is completely wide open into what we talk about, and I think we should all start from that approach.
I agree. And Rebecca?
So I would just agree with Sherry and with David. You know, I think that this is our opportunity, and you'll see that on the work plan, a couple of these areas are pretty broad and allow for a lot of discussion and a lot of opportunity to bring in new ideas. The other thing is the next item that we talk about actually is a very prescribed formula that allows other ideas to be brought in that may not organically grow through the committee. So I think that that is exactly the approach that we're taking. And to the extent that we have the data to show the positives or the negatives, we're going to try and crunch those numbers.
Jody?
So just two quick things. I think from at least our discussions with the internal chairs and what the expectation is with regard to what the work of this committee, the FMS committee over the summer, is basically what you said, Judge Conklin, and that is to step back as a step one on what were the original goals of WAFM when WAFM was created 5 years ago, and have we achieved those goals, and if not, what are some of the reasons? And obviously part of, you know, a big part of that reason is the fact that the funding that was anticipated didn't come through, but there are, you know, probably a handful of other reasons you may or may not have achieved those goals. And the impact, I think, on the trial courts of what has transpired is important. But the other piece of this is that whatever changes are made to the WAFM formula and whatever, you know, we end up with at the tail end in terms of a formula has to be in some way articulated to the other two branches of government on the reasons why this branch felt we needed to make changes A, B, C, D, whatever that is, and what the value of those changes. Because if you'll remember, when we created WAFM, we did those public meetings with legislators and their staff on why WAFM is important, but also the components of WAFM and why those were important at that point in time. So, you know, I fully anticipate something similar happening, but we're going to have to stand behind whatever those changes are, and I think we can, as a branch, be able to do that, especially with the history we've gained over the last, you know, 5 years. But part of that, if you'll remember, when we had those meetings with the legislature and DOF, this was one of the key things was, in addition to the fact that funding didn't materialize the way we had anticipated, there was an expectation of efficiency. And we've, over the last 5 years, have been very strong in saying to the other two branches of government, we have, as a branch, made a lot of different changes, every court has, and gained efficiencies. I think it's going to be important this next go-around, more than the last time, to say, how did those efficiencies impact the budgets and the funding?
So, Jody, I'm going to say at no time, because I was at every one of those public meetings, did we ever tie efficiencies with WAFM. WAFM was one time reallocating state funding for state work based on period.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think WAFM has done an incredibly good job in identifying some efficiencies because, as you'll see even from these numbers, the number of FTEs have gone down. And I think a lot of that is in the measurements. And the measurements are that one beauty about WAFM is as we become more efficient and the measurements continue, it continues to drive down the WAFM need.
Right.
Okay.
Right. But subsequent to WAFM, there have been discussions. The Department of Finance, I believe even, I could be wrong on this, but Z and Lucy can correct me, even LAO has honed in on the efficiency piece of it. So I think we need to be cognizant of that as a branch.
Okay.
And RAS should, I think, you know, the new RAS and future RASs takes into account those efficiencies. We ought to be able to see those in those numbers. That's all I'm saying.
We do.
Yeah.
The numbers are lower.
Yeah. Okay.
Judge
Conklin, this is Liz Johnson. Could I speak?
Sure. Go ahead.
I support WAFM in general and was new to the bench when we first adopted it and excited by the prospect of being able to overcome some of the entrenched historical inequities that had not been successfully dealt with at the time the Trial Court Funding Act was passed. And I think WAFM has been a huge success in doing that. But I think that what is happening and what Judge Kaufman pointed out and the reason why I voted no was because what is becoming apparent is that we are losing ground in the effort to obtain parity among the courts in that certain categories of courts are really feeling the pain across the board more than perhaps everyone is. And there have been letters written about this. It's a concern, and I'm hoping that the Funding Methodology Subcommittee will be able to keep that large problem in view as it approaches each one of these specific tasks. I'm happy to work with the committee. I think there's a group of small court judges that are interested in having input on that basis, on that particular topic. I don't see it among the topics here. So I would just ask for sensitivity to that. And again, I do support this effort. The main reason for voting against the approval of the allocations was so that we could actually hit the pause button and let the work of the funding subcommittee inform the allocation process going forward rather than having one more year of agony. So that said, I guess I would make a motion to adopt the work plan, possibly with the addition of an item that recognizes the prospect of achieving better parity among the courts.
All right, so I want to be real careful. Jake asked, had his hand to speak. So there's been a motion. As I understand your motion, Judge Johnson, your motion is to approve the proposed work plan that was submitted by FMS. That's on page 45 of your materials. And then I just want to drill down a little bit on your proposed addition. You say the prospect of better parity?
Right. And I think we need to look at that in terms of the historical inequities. That's the whole purpose behind WAFM, was to overcome that. But are we creating now what Judge Kaufman called a two-tier system? Not sure the best way to phrase that. Maybe others have an idea.
All right. So there's a motion. So that provides for and requires that there either be a second to the motion or further discussion on the motion before a second. Jake, did you have a comment?
I can wait to listen.
Okay. So there's a motion. The motion is to approve the work plan. All right. Ms. Carter seconded. Judge Earl, did you have a second or was your hand up? Were your hands up? I didn't know what it was for.
I have a comment that I can wait.
Okay, well, there's been now a motion to approve the work plan and a second with the additional, and Judge Johnson, I don't know if you're asking it to be added as an additional item or with an overall goal of also discussing the prospect of parity among the courts. Judge Earl?
I think it could be an overall goal.
Okay. Judge Earl?
No, go ahead. So I have two things. One, I would like some discussion before the vote on some, just a little more detail on some of the things that are on the subcommittee work plan.
You bet.
But my comment has to do with WAFM in general. Obviously, I have a great investment in WAFM, but I think the work of the Funding Methodology Subcommittee to look at where do we go from here is crucial. I think, in my opinion, WAFM was fluid and was always meant to be looked at and evaluated to determine whether or not certain components were working or not, which is I think evident from the fact that within the first year there were three amendments to the work plan to accommodate things that weren't working. But my investment in WAFM is an investment in a workload model. I believe it's crucial that the branch continue to have a funding formula based on workload, and that's where my investment of WAFM is rooted.
Excellent.
I absolutely agree with that. I think it needs to be based on something that's tangible, and workload really is the tangible instrument we have. I'd like to ask the question of Judge Johnson, what is your definition of parity? What are you looking for in parity?
Judge Johnson, did you hear that?
I did, and I think Judge Earl hit the nail on the head. I think the problem with the historical funding was that it was basically an accident of geography, how different courts were funded, and it had very little to do with workload and the needs in a particular community. I think the workload allocation formula approach is the right approach, and that is why I said I support WAFM. Parity would need to be achieved by a better understanding of the workload requirements among the courts.
Thank you. I just wasn't sure where you were going because it really, from my perspective, there has to be some tangible basis, and workload is the one thing that we all have. How it's measured is
right, and you can say every court does the same thing. Well, every court doesn't exactly do the same thing, and we've tried to deal with that with weighted filing requirements and things like that. And I think we're doing a good job of identifying needs. We just have to be fair about how we fund them.
Yeah. And, so would you compare or equate parity to equity?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, I would.
The girl?
I think just one of the goals of the funding methodology subcommittee when WAFM was created was to achieve parity or equity, and I think we use those terms interchangeably. And I would hope and assume that the funding methodology subcommittee going forward will be looking at whether or not we've, as Jody said, we've reached that goal or getting close to that goal of parity and equity in our funding allocation. So I'm hopeful, and I'm looking to assure us that is one thing that we will be looking at.
And I'm sure we'll be looking to you as well. Judge, Jake?
So a couple of different kind of strategies. So one is that if you look at the work plan itself, I want to make sure we're being aware that there are two separate tracks that are going to exist. So one is looking at how have we done, you know, how has WAFM moved us towards greater equity, and is the way it's being allocated the correct way to do it, or do we want a whole different scenario, right? That's going to take some time and a lot of data to back us up. We can't lose sight of the things that we want to do, but let's say the resolution is yes, we want to continue to use in some form or fashion, don't know what that might be, but in some form or fashion, going forward, there are things we need to look at in the work plan that are listed. So, you know, really items 2 through 12 are about how would you modify the existing model. So we need to make sure we're moving on those, and those are still taking action. Even though the resolution out of item 1 on the work plan might be, you know, the model isn't going to be used to reallocate funding the next year. But we still need to make sure we're improving the model, and we don't just have a whole year of not making adjustments. So I just want to put that out, but there's kind of two tracks going on. So when people hear about modifications being made to WAFM, you know, hope that they don't think that that means that that's a foregone conclusion, that there is some reallocation happening the following year. But they're two separate.
Right. So there's others, and I'm going to go to them, but just to echo your comments, and just, for instance, I know Mr. Finke's in the room is just to observe, but I don't want him to think we weren't. Alameda's made public comment in the past, and public comment has been, and it has been added to the work plan, that one of the tracks be we move to a different methodology than WAFM. So, Jake, I appreciate your comment. This does not presuppose that the committee will not also be addressing WAFM itself. So I don't. If anybody's listening in, all these comments about WAFM, the subcommittee itself has a very broad task ahead of it, and one of those is to consider other suggestions and requests outside of WAFM.
I think my point there is, but that doesn't mean we aren't going to continue to modify WAFM. Otherwise, we lose an entire year of work. The second one is, as we talk about this, what we sometimes lose sight of, and we think is important to focus on next year, is there are two different steps. There is how you estimate workload. And I agree with what Judge Earl and others have said, Tanya, we can't move away from having a workload-driven model that says here's what a court needs. And we can debate how you calculate that number and what goes into that number, but that we can't lose sight of that. So we still have how do you calculate your need, and then how do you allocate what you have. And the concerns that come up more often than not are about how you allocate what we have, rather than did it correctly calculate what you needed. And so I think we need to be careful as we look next year to separate those two and keep our eye on, is it need and how you calculate it, or is it how do we allocate the money that's left? And there are certainly things we need to look at. Is it 3 years, is it 5 years, to Sherry's point? Are there limits that say, well, if your change was less than X percent, there's no fluctuation? Is it we only review it every X number of years? And all those we need to look at, but that's about how you allocate, not necessarily how you estimate the need. So we need to make sure we're keeping that separate.
Very good. Thank you. David?
All right. Ed? Yeah, let me give you a Reader's Digest version. So I'm going to try to give this as truncated as I can. The historic was based on the funding when the counties funded the courts.
From 94.
Correct. So you recall back in those eras, pre-94, the counties received the funding, then the counties funded the courts, and it was based in large part on the relationship that the county had with its court. So they had, on a, speaking as a whole, on all 58, on a statewide perspective, had as much precision for need as putting numbers on a wall and throwing a dart. There was no uniform metric throughout the state of California. Then trial court funding came into effect, and that the pro rata was adopted when there was centralization, allocations flowed through the central branch, and there was a need or observation that there were inequities because of those adopted historic pro ratas. So that was the need for WAFM, in addition to the joint commission by the governor and the chief justice pressuring to do this. And then Lori was gracious enough to step in the line of fire and put together the group, of which there's about eight of us here at the table now. It was intended to, number one, come up with a metric that was quantifiable, and it wasn't just based on numbers out of the air. Two, it was to bring the courts into within a bandwidth of funding on a, again, measurable metric, and this group can certainly look at whether or not workload is the metric that is quantifiable and should be continued. When pitched to the Judicial Council, there were several components to it, and that's something that the committee struggled with, and that is the implementation of WAFM was going to, number one, have a devastating effect on certain courts, and it was not going to provide enough relief for other courts such as the Inland Empire. We understood that. There were discussions going on. How do we get consensus in order to move this from the committee to the Judicial Council? And so as Beth Freeman, who's now federal court judge, who came up with a very sage suggestion, then everybody lapped on to that, which a five-year glide path was suggested to ease it. Two, that WAFM be implemented only 50%, not 100%, and that three, 50% of that money should be new money, so that it indicates, based on the WAFM analysis, that the legislature and the governor aren't investing enough money to fully fund the judiciary in which it needs to do its job based on verifiable, quantifiable metrics. And so we'll note that when that was pitched to them, that there were unresolved issues, which we call parking lot items, and that this is a fluid formula and that it would be analyzed later, not to modify it to somehow gain the system, but to refine it, because we knew this was a work in progress and that refinement would come from experience, analyzing it, having a track record of 5 years behind us, et cetera. Efficiencies were talked about in the governor's first two State of the Union speeches. We heard about it in some committee hearings. It dissipated a little over time, and I think in part because WAFM efficiencies are a byproduct of WAFM. It forced a number of the courts, because it wasn't getting the 50% new money in there, for the courts to become innovative. They had to, in order to figure out how to keep the doors open, provide service as best they can, given that we did not have full resources. So the efficiency issue has never gone away. In fact, there was an innovation committee that was led by Judge Walsh at Santa Clara that did remarkable things, and efficiencies for a while seemed to evaporate, and then it came back into the dialogue, and we're hearing efficiencies again. And efficiency is always a great thing for government, and I don't think the branch should ever abandon it. And I agree with Jody. We should continue to emphasize the efficiencies that the branch are achieving.
Well, I don't mean to interrupt you, but is your perspective, we're talking about two different efficiencies. One is WAFM efficient versus the efficiencies of the trial courts in their operations?
And I'm talking more about the byproduct.
All right, sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to.
I'll leave it to the group to figure out the efficiencies that WAFM itself creates. I think as a byproduct, it forced all the courts to come up with ways of becoming more efficient. So there are direct and indirect efficiencies, and I think you shouldn't lose side of that, and that you should classify those as such when this committee looks at that. So I wanted to make sure that you understood that this is what was presented to the council. Council unanimously accepted the recommendation as presented, noting that it is fluid. And so I will wholeheartedly agree that this should be looked at that this is an opportune time to go back and see what's working, what doesn't work. We have 58 different locales which have different economies, which have different factors. So sometimes trying to figure a one-size-fits-all formula doesn't necessarily work. There have to be adjustments from time to time. And our committee talked about that, discussed it, argued, et cetera. And those are good things to look at. What would concern me is that we just simply blindly accept it, walk away, and we're not doing anything else. And I haven't heard anybody in this room suggest that we do that, and that's a great thing. This is an opportunity for us to continue to improve a formula that, quite frankly, alarmed me when we were in Sacramento and we're hearing for the first time from some of the others, like LAO after the third year, et cetera, that they're not really sure what the formula works. Are you kidding me? You wait 3 years to tell us that? And we had a lively discussion out in the hallway with LAO and DOF on that very subject. If you've got a problem, fantastic. You've got some brilliant people. Why don't you give us an idea of what you think is deficient about it? I haven't heard that. All I've heard is the generic sense that maybe there's problems with it. Well, I read that as political language. I'm going to throw this up against the wall because it's a distraction, and that's really not the issue. We're filled with politicals in here.
I can assure you, as a co-chair of the subcommittee, this is anything but a rubber stamp.
Absolutely.
There are members of the committee. Anyways. So,
that's the Reader's Digest of what's going on. It's a great thing. I don't know if you've published the list of the committee. If you haven't,
it's right on the website of the FMS.
Yep.
It's right on the website. I can read it to you right here, but it's public. If you go to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee and it has subcommittees listed on it, this is a subcommittee listed right there. Every member is in this room and listed. So I'm trying to keep track of the hands in the room.
And thank you for the opportunity.
That's fine. I appreciate your Reader's Digest. Sherry, did you have anything? Your hand was up. But
I think it's
David?
Yes, I do.
Okay. You do have a comment?
Yes.
Go ahead.
So I'm not sure if you anticipated delving into some of these elements.
Judge Earl has asked you, so we're going to. As far as the work plan itself?
The only one I'm interested in, and others may have, was number three.
Go ahead. So
get an understanding of what that means.
So I'm not prepared to vote in support of this. Because in my view, it doesn't cover some of the key areas that it needs to. I'm not prepared to vote in support of this particular work plan because, in my view, I don't think it covers some of the areas that I think we need to. Part of what I just mentioned.
So what would you like to add? Are you proposing? So there's been a motion. And seconded to approve with the additional theme, and Judge Johnson, if you want to add to that, let me know, of parity, but did you want to suggest we add items?
Well, let me point out a couple of pieces. One is I think it's important for us to look at what's happened. I think that's the strategic part of this particular work plan. Whether that stays or not, I don't know.
When you say what's happened, do you mean what we've previously?
What's the experience been of WAPO?
And that's
operational.
So I agree. We've discussed that, and if you want to try to add that, I think that's appropriate to say we don't know where we're going to go until we know where we've been. I don't mean to be trite about this, but that is clearly something we're going to start with. I talked a few minutes ago about numbers versus impact, and one of them will be the numbers. Where has WAFM, as it's gone over the past 5 years, where have those numbers gotten us? So I don't know if that. Right. So evaluate the
review WAFM and the
review and evaluate.
Right.
Okay.
Impact on the process. The other thing is
that would entail courts giving us feedback to some survey instrument.
And just so you know, I won't approve it. It's too subjective in my opinion. I think that this analysis is based on numbers and where we've moved, and it's going back to Jake's comments in terms of our two issues. One is how we measure, one is how we allocate it, I think that there are quantifiable things we can look at, like where did you start from, Kern? Oh, yeah, you were 58% funded, and A up here was 165% of average. Have they moved closer to the middle? I think we can look at objective criteria, because when we talk about lack of parity, that's the reason we created. There has always been a two-tier system with those that are like Kern and those that are above the average, and we are now trying to reduce the gap. But subjective information, I wouldn't support as a modification to the motion. Somebody else may, but I am very interested in objective reviews of where courts have gone.
But Sherry, that's why I asked, how would we extract, then I put in quotes, the data, if it is just, narrative about it? We'd have to sit and think about what it is that we would be extracting from folks.
And my statement was not limited to subjective variables, rather objective, very, very specific data-oriented information.
Okay, so
that's what I'm interested in.
So I'm just trying to be procedurally, if we have a motion that's been seconded, and now David, was yours a motion to amend? And then Sherry's not accepting,
no,
but she's
explaining what it is I think is important for us to do now. If that ultimately turns into a motion to amend, certainly I'm sensitive to what Sherry just mentioned, but it was not my intent.
Rebecca?
So I don't know if this helps David in terms of answering or addressing the concern of the evaluation or not, but the next item, which was the proposal for the evaluation of new factors or modifications, includes very specific things to be looked at, and that includes things like a detailed analysis of why the adjustment is necessary, a detailed description of the staffing need or cost required to support the factor, all these different things. And that, while that particular, and that's next in your materials, so you can look and see what those items are, but while this submission is being modified, it's only being modified in terms of the timing of it, the substantive things that we'll be looking at for the evaluation, and this would apply to everything. This would not just be if somebody submitted something, but we're going to be looking at, if there's something on this list, we're going to be looking at the same criteria for the things on this list. So I don't know if encompassed in this description here is what you're looking for. I think we've already started down that path kind of behind the scenes, but certainly if there's something missing, I think we could throw it in there in terms of the evaluation process. I don't know if that makes you feel better or not.
Well, I think what Ms. Conklin mentioned, that it's part of the process that we're talking about. So that's very helpful.
It is. So I'm trying to, and again, the subcommittee itself, and we'll cover this in item 3, does have a schedule, and during that time period, we'll be considering all these suggestions. So as we set forth the work plan, item 1 in particular, we stated very broadly to try to encompass suggestions such as David's. So next was Kevin Harrigan. Did you, any additional comment?
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. Go ahead, David.
Okay. So the other thing is it relates to item number 2, and it mentions new judgeship staffing complement funding. There's a variable that I think it may be subtle, I don't know, but why are we limiting our review to just these? What about judgeship complement funding? And the reason why I bring that up, and it goes back to a little bit of ancient history, so to speak, when all of the judges were established for the different jurisdictions, it was based on a couple of assumptions. One, workload. And if you got a judge, you had a complement of staff to accompany. Now, what's going on and what's happening is that funding is the way that was supposed to support the judges, but the judges remain. So whether that's if we are reducing resources to jurisdictions to eliminate the staffing, what's left to support the judges? So that's an issue, and I think that's something that if we were to eliminate the word new, just to evaluate it, and I don't know where this is going to go, but I think it's something that was the basis for giving a court a judge and giving them a complement of staffing, and now the judges remain, yet the money for the staffing is gone. It's been moved around through the WAPA formula. So, again, I'm not sure where it's going to go, but I think that may be something that we may want to consider. And the other thing is just one other thing, and it relates to item number 8. Item number 8, I think, was part of the parking lot list of issues to determine if we need to establish a funding floor, and that was something that we created at the first year. Is that something that needs to continue? Because right now, it's very specific. Should it be increased, so to speak, but not necessarily is it something that should remain, or should it be part of?
It says review, so it says review funding for calculation.
So can I ask a second? If that's a motion to amend, I agree with David. We can take out the word new and just look at how judgeship staffing impacts. So this is just a list of the things
sure.
to consider.
But I don't
sure.
want to be limited to.
But the point of the new was if you get, for the benefit, the new was
but,
you get
but
staffing.
But if the committee is going to look at, you know, yeah, I understand what the intent was. I was at the meeting when the list was put together. You know what? It has to go to the person who made the motion first. Anyway.
Is there a reason why we should not also include existing?
Well, I think that there's two different discussions.
Right.
One is if you get 10 judgeships and you get 80 people, that helps you with your WAFA need because you have staff. So how do you deal with the staffing complement if we were proposing new positions as part of the staffing? The discussion of what has happened and eroded your judgeship staffing ability, I think that's why I see those as two different things. One is how does any new judgeships that come with staffing influence your WAFM share?
David's comment of taking out the word new includes both, because now you're talking about judgeship staffing, and it gives the committee the flexibility to look at if under the judicial needs assessment you have 22 more than your workload says you should we talk about it?
Right.
And if you get new judgeship, should we look at it?
I agree that the new judgeship has to be part of this.
I think just from a managing the 12, then the refinement, it's not that I'm suggesting that we don't, but whether or not we keep them separate for the purposes of just maintaining a reasonable work plan for the upcoming year, and whether or not those are can be reasonably separated and discussed in a subsequent year. I don't know. I'm worrying about that.
You really don't have 12 months.
No.
Right. The scope here is going to be really critical for you all because what you really probably have is the balance of this calendar year before you bring in the rest of the branch, the council, all of that.
So there's a whole bunch of hands in the room. I want to ensure everybody's acknowledgement. Tanya is about to take off my right arm, so I just want to let her make a comment very quickly, and then we'll keep going.
If we can do the Reader's Digest years ago when I was here, and I know Brian was as well, there was a staffing complement that went with each challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So it was 0.8 of this and 1.10 of a bailiff. 0.8 of a court reporter, whatever those numbers were, they've gone away. Because if we're going to look at this based on workload, if the workload determines you have number of judges, if that moves, it's not changing. You have a certain amount of staff to support the workload. If you've got more judges than that, that becomes a problem, which is, I think, one of the other things that's being dealt with. If you don't have enough judges, you still have a workload model that says you have this many staff members to deal with those. You're dealing with assigned judges coming in and what have you. It's all workload. We need to stay focused on the workload.
And I would think the new judge designation would allow us to separate the two. But, Rebecca, do you want to make a comment?
Yeah, just to answer one of David's questions on this and also Judge Earl's question on number 3, many of these items have been carried from year to year that were original parking lot items, and the group made the decision to trail them and watch them as activities evolving with other groups. So, for instance, the technology funding stream now is being addressed in another area, but this group felt the need to keep apprised of that. So it stayed on the list, and we're getting updates as things happen. And, David, this particular item, it said new judgeships because at the time we were specifically addressing a judgeship request that had been made and what happens when that judgeship comes in with staffing. So that answers the questions as to why that's there. And that actually also addresses the floor as well. That was a carryover as well.
Judge, I'm just trying to go in order of hands. Kevin?
Yeah, I'll be quick question. I think you might have touched on it. This work plan is, they're numbered, but it's no particular order of priority.
That's correct. We had to number them, but it's not a hierarchy.
Perfect. And then, I would support David's idea of looking at where we've been and maybe add that as 1B to the work plan, because if we're talking about where we're going to go forward, then.
So plans for FY18-19 year and year six and beyond, A is simplified display, B is review and evaluate WAFM, which that's who made the original motion?
I did, Judge Johnson.
Any objection to that amendment?
No, but I don't think it goes quite to the heart of what David was driving at, which is not just review and evaluate, but what are the effects of WAFM? Is that right, David?
Yeah, yes, but I think the way that it was worded would address some of the issues that I had some concerns with. So as amended, I think that would I would be supportive of that.
Okay, I'll address that amendment.
Okay.
Also part of that suggestion would be to not only fuss around percentage of need versus actual funding, I would also like to see as part of that, I'm assuming it would be just to be explicit, whole dollars.
Sure. Thank you. Anything else, Kevin? Mike Planet, I think, was the next hand.
I'll save my comments for the next
discussion.
I just want to say I don't know how to answer the question about WAFM efficiency. Because we've had been asked to think about it, and for reasons I'll talk about later, I don't know how you could possibly get to a survey of all the courts where you could get them that information in a way that would be useful.
All right, the next I saw was Judge Kaufman.
I understand what Brian gave a synopsis. That's a very good historical synopsis of what's happening. And I was on the council, cast WAFM, I was on the efficiency committee also. And basically it is when we cast WAFM, nobody knew it was going to work. Nobody knew what it was. We were going to implement something because we had to because of what we had. The historical model was not fair. It was unfair to a lot of courts, and we needed to figure out a better way to distribute money. So we came up with WAFM. And the concept that was sold was basically after 4 or 5 years, you then study the results, figure out what we should do next, whether we keep WAFM, whether we tweak it, whatever we do. That's all we're doing here. It's basically saying we have the 5 years under our belt. Now let's say examine the whole program and see what works, what doesn't work, what's efficient, what isn't efficient, and then come up with either a different system or a better way to tweak WAFM or to leave it alone, whatever. But that's what the Professional Employment Group is going to do, hopefully, without. And I would hope this list is not a implementation, but just an example of what they have.
Right.
Is it an exclusive list?
No, well, exclusive, yes and no, in the sense of once we approve this, if we do approve this, that's the list. So it's also a very broad list, specifically item number one, plans for FY18-19 and beyond now with the amendment. That was intended to be a very broad, an umbrella, essentially, of the work to include the proposals that have been made in public comment, the discussions here today. So we're trying to balance between a reasonably defined work plan versus a broad work plan that will allow us to address these numerous concerns. Judge Heinrichs, you were next with your hand up.
Well, what I wanted to say was the reason why partly it was broad is we wanted to make sure that any county, all 58, would be able to fill into this so that the end result, I mean, we all sort of agree, if WAFM was fully funded and it was a funding tool and not a division of money tool, we wouldn't be having all these long meetings and need to have them, because most courts would say if WAFM was fully funded, we'd all make it work. It would work. And so, but we have to somehow create a tool for discussion with the governor and the legislative branch that it's not a division of money tool. It is a true estimation of our needs. And to do that, we need to have all 58 counties saying, you know, on good and bad, you know, we're a branch and we're standing by it to make these moves. And so we have to be. First, we have to listen and hear those things, and then we need to address it so that we actually could get 58
direction the branch should go. And, you know, if that means part of what we throw in is true accountability of give us $100 and we'll tell you exactly what we did with $100 and it was well spent, then that may be part of what we do. But my sense of keeping it broad is because when it was narrow, we got to say, well, we can't talk about that because it's not part of our action plan. And I don't want to have another year of that. I want to be able to have real, meaningful discussions where every court feels like they can be included so that the work that we end up with is something that we can pass on and say, this is, you know, we evaluated, we did, and this is a funding need. It's not an allocation model. Because that's what's killing us. It's like to give the small courts what they need, we take from somebody else's money that they need. And then we have to argue whose need is greater, and that becomes esoteric. You know, maybe we just, you know, maybe in the big picture thing, small courts don't need to have staff at all. They can just have video monitors. Well, that's not really justice. I mean, I would argue. But, you know, if we're talking about, you know, what need is, that's the sliding scale of when we talk about our individual courts. But if we really could say this is a fair allocation of what we need, and it's as important or it's more important than our mental health and Department of Health, you know, Health and Services, all of those things, because when those things fail, they come to the courts for their answers and redress. And if we aren't fully funded, we can't serve our purpose. And you know, I know they don't like to hear or it didn't work before that we're a co-equal branch of the legislative, you know, of things. But at the same time, I think interwoven into what our role is important, especially if you're talking about that, you know, we are, I mean, you know, talking preaching to the choir, we're the guardians of democracy. And if you don't fund us, then we just limp along and people and citizens of the state lose. And so I'm hoping that this work, and I'm on the committee and their discussions is really focused on spending lots of time to try to get this to be something that will carry us through in a way that we can get support. And it's critical, because if we don't, then we just splinter off again, and we all lose.
And item three, just as a reminder, item three is going to be the discussion where we talk about getting the message out and getting the message back. Next was Judge Barton. Did you?
Yeah, I think just to follow up on David's comment, I think it's implied in the discussion and the wide-ranging nature of item number one. But we need to look forward as well in terms of what are the various effects of various proposed models or changes to the model. And that also answers Jody's concern about, at the end of the day, how do we sell the other two branches of government on whatever this model is? So you can't ignore the effects going forward. What benefits do we buy by various alternatives, and what detriments do we incur by going down certain routes? That's not expressly stated, but I think it's an essential component of the evaluation.
All right. So those are the hands that I saw. Jake?
I want to get back to the point about what's on the work plan versus not what's on the work plan. I mean, just the comment I made before, which is there is going to be this overarching review saying how do we move forward and what type of model. But we also have very specific items that are listed to try and address within the existing model because that model exists and concerns it. So if you take number one out of it, so number one is we're going to do this big review. So that every close council, that's the big review, how do we move forward. But items 2 through 12 really are trying to address concerns with the existing model that has been raised. So, you know, there's a big discussion in the legislature about what to do with bail, you know, bail. And that's going to take some matter of time. Well, we're all still revising our local bail schedules, right? So, you know, I put it that way. You know, let's make sure we're saying 2 through 12 is what the staff at the JCC who supports the committee are going to be working on. I mean, that there's an answer we're trying to get out of those. I think the likelihood of getting 11 done in a year is about zero, but, you know, we have 11. But they're there. We haven't accomplished that many in a year yet. But, you know, we'll get through four or five of them and get an answer. So I just want to make sure one is overarching, but we still have to make, we can't have let it sit.
Right. Linda, did you have?
I forgot. What is, can you
elaborate
on the goals?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Number 10.
So originally on the work plan, I want to say 2 or 3 years, maybe even on the original, there was a discussion as to a value that was the value that was placed on services that were provided to the, in particular, the small
small and medium courts and how that should be equated to courts that are providing those services in-house. And so that evaluation has not yet been addressed.
Judge Herman?
A couple of observations about the efficiencies issue, which sort of been turning around. And the governor's overarching issue on efficiencies in the courts is that he doesn't feel we should be 58 different courts. That's his big coming down from the top of the cone issue. So I don't know how we struggle with that over time. It's his issue, his views on that are not going to change. And point two, the efficiencies issue really is a difficult issue because just because you're a court that's had significantly reduced resources, either because of the budget generally or because of the WAFM structure, it doesn't mean that you're delivering quality of justice. It just means that you're doing more with less. You've lost senior staff. You've lost staff positions. You've lost commissioners, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's going to be tricky to divide what's really efficient in a positive way, which is just, on the other hand, doing more with less, which appear to be efficient to the other two branches.
You're right. I mean, I think efficiency and justice don't necessarily go hand in hand. Was there? Okay, David. I think that's the last hand I saw was Judge Herman. If I left somebody, not that we're closing the discussion, I'm just trying to keep track of all the hands, David.
So I wanted to move an amendment to either to language in item two to strike the word new with the for the reasons that I had expressed earlier, right?
So that's an amendment, that move for an amendment, but the motion was made by
Judge Johnson. And the second one is related to item number 8, put a period at the end of calculation, and then start out with determined handling of inflation and refresh cycle.
So is your motion to strike, or can you state it again, your amendment?
It would read review funding for calculation.
And then strike to determine handling of inflation refresh cycle?
Or
add it as another.
You do a comma.
Review funding for calculation, comma, determine, or semicolon,
correct.
Whichever it is.
Correct.
Okay. Strike the word two. Review funding for calculation, who's the, and? Judge Coffin suggested and determine handling of inflation refresh cycle.
Yes, exactly.
And. So, Judge Johnson, let's work backwards. Do you accept that friendly amendment to item 8, review funding floor calculation and determine handling of inflation refresh cycle?
Yes.
So now to 2, David has asked that the amendment be strike the word new. Now, we've had a discussion in the room about actually breaking those two out and keeping the item as phrased for new so we can address new versus existing and workload.
Well, I accept that because I think that just adds flexibility to the committee's charge.
So how about this, Judge Johnson?
Including new.
New and existing judgeship staffing complement funding.
Yes.
So item 2 is now new and existing judgeship staffing complement funding. Item 1 has been amended to add a B to it, which was review and evaluate WAFM. And finally, item 8 has been amended to simply alter the word to after calculation to and. So it now reads review funding for calculation and determine handling of inflation cycles. And the discussion was, rather than my recollection was, though Judge Johnson, I want to drill down on this, rather than amend it to say goal of parity and equity, that the subcommittee understands that an overarching goal of this entire discussion is parity and equity, one of those goals, rather than an amendment.
That's fine.
All right. So, Mike Planis.
Question. I want to be clear on the amendment that I understand it. So it says review and evaluate, but the process by which what that means is to be determined.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd like to understand B to decide if I'm in a second motion or not.
Because if it's this retro look to see, whether it worked or not, I would not be in support of that change. If we want to talk further about what we mean by review and evaluate, I would support
that. But, you know, I'm not in favor of this. Let's go back and do a survey of everybody and find out what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, part of this tied into item three, which item three is setting forth the timetable or the procedures for this, the this, these items coming before the FMS.
Can I suggest that maybe we say that the tool to be used is going to be further reviewed by the subcommittee and brought back for final approval? So that, because I don't think we're going to work out the details right now.
And we're not going to get it done by the end of the year.
So I think that it's important that we...
The general?
So I think we have to trust our subcommittee.
Yeah.
They report back to us, and ultimately we will approve whatever...
Yeah. And that's an excellent point. This ultimately, and I appreciate it, this will ultimately come back to this advisory committee.
And
so,
the meetings are open, and we all have an opportunity to listen in, attend, provide comments. If you don't like the way that they're going...
I'm asking as a member of the...
Well, but that's what needs to be worked out in the subcommittee.
So rather than amended to add, are you suggesting we simply do not have Amendment B, review and evaluate?
No, I think that's fine, but I think it's up to the subcommittee to determine what parameters and what tools to use to do that.
It gets to the point of whether this is exclusive. I'd hope if you find something that wasn't discussed and that's significant, that you'd pursue.
Of course, absolutely.
What's the language on B? Could you repeat it?
Review and evaluate funding methodology.
Well, that's about as broad as you're
exactly. That's the exact point. It's this again. This I've heard comments in the room about good luck. You're never going to get this done. So there's the discussion between, you know, we can't. We've got to have something reasonably defined so we can accomplish our task as best possible versus making sure the task encompasses the concerns. So I truly appreciate Judge Earl's comments. And speaking as a co-chair, I'll let Rebecca said the same, but we're very aware of this, and we're very aware of the fact that we're going to come back to this exact committee for additional discussion. Judge?
Well, Ms. Kaufman just emailed me to ask you.
Judge Kaufman did?
Yeah, to make a motion to call the question.
Okay.
And you'll second it?
So the call of the question is as amended. There's been amendments. The amendments have been accepted and seconded.
I have been seconded.
I'm sorry. All right.
So just so I know, we are or are not including the B?
Yes, we are. That's the current motion.
The big review, okay?
Right.
And we're taking the word new out and we're adding.
We're taking the word two out and adding and.
Sure.
Yes. And
new.
We're taking new and existing.
Sure.
All right. So there is the motion. Is there a second to that motion with the friendly amendments?
Yes.
All right. Sherry seconded. So now it's been moved and seconded. So first off, is there any request in the room for clarification? And if not, any further discussion of approving this FMS work plan? Hearing no further discussion, I think we're going to take a vote on this. I'm working back to the old-fashioned method. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
So that was an aye. Are there any opposed to the motion? So, Judge Culp has voted no. Waiting, pausing. I'm calling it. So, therefore, it's approved with one nay and otherwise all have approved. Now, it's... 10 minutes to noon. We have item three still to go, which is our last action item. I'm just trying to work with schedules. We're well within time. I don't know if lunch is even here yet. Lunch isn't even here yet, so we're going to keep going.
There's not sufficient.
Not all of it.
Yeah,
not
sufficient.
Only part of it. Those of you on the diet,
however,
lunch is here.
So bear with me. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take 10 minutes right now. Just for a comfort break, if you catch my drift.
No stealing sandwiches.
But don't go eat. Please come back at noon. I think the next discussion is going to be relatively brief by 12:30 at the latest, and then we'll have lunch and we're right on schedule. So comfort break for 10 minutes only, please. But I'd really like at 12 noon to go to item three. And don't bring food in yet. It's not here yet.
I'm going to do my
thing. We're bifurcating lunch or we're trailing lunch?
Trailing lunch. Pardon me?
I'm saying.
So we're unmuted now. We are now recording. We're moving to item three, which is the recommendation again from FMS on the WAFM adjustment request process and adjustment timeline. And I'm turning it over to Rebecca, the co-chair of FMS, to discuss this.
And hopefully this is a fairly easy discussion. So with this procedure actually was originally put into place in August of 2013, and over time there has been an overall approach. It was involved in any kind of suggestions to the working group for modifications. And so what we did is we went through the existing procedure, and if you look on page 50, you will see the marked up copy, and we inserted dates that, as Judge Conklin referred to earlier, we worked backwards from the point of which that the Judicial Council would need to do approval for a fiscal year. So this actually starts with the initial request being submitted no later than January 15th of the year commencing, January 15th of each year. And this starts with January 15th of 2018. Then we go on to identify where those submissions get sent to, because there has been some confusion as to whether or not it goes to the chair of the TICFAC committee or the chair of the FMS committee or the director of the JCC or whomever, and so that has been identified in number two. That request is then referred to the funding methodology subcommittee at the April meeting of TICFAC. Subsequently then, as noted in number three, the subcommittee will then review the referral from TICFAC and prioritize the request into the annual work plan to be submitted back to TICFAC in July of the new fiscal year. So while this particular list was proposed, if there was a submission under this process, the funding methodology subcommittee would evaluate it and either decide to incorporate it into the work plan or subsequently put it on the back burner until there's available slots, et cetera. Once prioritized, it will be evaluated by the committee, and it'll include a three-step process, which is all part of the original procedure. Moving on to number five then, the subcommittee will review the request and present the recommendation back to this group no later than January prior to the year proposed for implementation. And that gets to the point that Mike Roddy made earlier, in that we're trying to get information out as early as possible so people have time to plan when there is an adjustment to the formula that will affect the outcome of an allocation. Finally, the TICFAC will make the recommendation to the Judicial Council no later than March or April meeting. And we will not make any changes after, we will not recommend any changes for the fiscal year after March or April. So in other words, we would not recommend a change for this next fiscal year today because it's after March or April and there's not enough time to plan. Let's see, the other changes we did insert number eight, if there is some kind of an expedited action necessary, this does not preclude the committee from addressing that. Are there any questions?
I move to accept the recommendation.
There's a move and a second on the recommendation. I'm pausing for a moment. Go ahead. So the only clarification is for technical changes only that would come from the administrative staff. The administrative staff would still have the ability to make technical changes as they move along, as they always have. So this doesn't eliminate that pre-existing opportunity, so to speak. So it's been moved and seconded, and again, our goal here is to try to make sure that the courts are aware of the timetable, so to speak, so that everybody who has a suggestion has a chance to be heard on that suggestion, get the information out to get the information in. Moved and seconded, now opening up the discussion about item number three in the recommendation that is set forth at page 47 of your materials.
to recommend the revisions of the adjustment request process be considered at the July 28th Judicial Council meeting. Discussion? Maybe we should have had lunch. Okay, no discussion. Call the vote. Any opposed to this recommendation? Hearing no opposition to the chair, I'm deeming the recommendation passed unanimously. So now that we've come back from our comfort break and we've taken action on three, I've talked to Zlatko, and he needs to present now before lunch so that he can go do other work that he's required to do.
Well, if the conference committee does meet at 1, like they said they will. So some of you had the benefit of my brief update, Jay and CEO meeting last week, and those that you haven't, too bad. I'm not going to say it all over again. No. So we went through the legislative subcommittee, each house, the budget subcommittee, budget conference committees started last week. They finally finished going through what's called the first round of the book on Monday. It took them a bit longer than we all thought, but there's a lot of issues and actually a lot of variation, massive differences between the Senate version, the Assembly version, and the governor's budget. So they go through the book. They took about, of the 160 actions, I think they took like 30. So there was a tremendous amount of work left to be done on the second pass. And that, we believe, is starting up today. And our sense is that between Monday and today, the two houses have been figuring out what they want to do in where they differ and trying to craft a budget that when they send to the governor, he'll accept. Because, as you know, since the governor's been here, he's been very firm on his revenues, which they have great variation on between the governor and both plans. One has borrowing, one has higher revenues. They both spend more money than the governor did, and I'll go over a few issues in which that's in our area. But he's given them pretty firm parameters as to what the budget he wants to see out of them. And it's always been, if you hear the testifier from the Department of Finance talking about it, it's not part of our fiscal plan, our fiscal architecture or structure. And then depending on what it might be, it said, you know, to the extent that you find it in your legislative budget, then, you know, maybe we can talk about parameters. But it is this live within the revenues and make sure that the priorities of the governor are dealt with, and there's going to be some room. There's always some room. The governor gives them some room, but there's not a lot of room. But yet they've spent a lot more than the governor has. But so what the expectation is that today, and no later than tomorrow, that the legislature will have completed all of their actions. They've spent 5 days, 4 days, having very lengthy discussions on all 60 issues, 160 issues that were in conference committee. So one can expect that when they arrive today or tomorrow, that it will be probably a fairly quick process in which the announcement by the chair will be is that these have been fully discussed. And I'll entertain motions, and it's going to be Senate or Assembly or some compromise, and it's going to be a 3-2 vote on each side because there's 5 conferees on the Assembly side and 5 conferees on the Senate side, 3 Democrats, 2 Republicans. So it's not a surprise that it would be 3-2, and the measure passes, and they just move through and close things down. Because the other complicating factor of this process this year is that I don't know who voted for this in this room, but Proposition 54 requires that legislation be in print for 72 hours prior to action being taken by the houses. And so if we're talking about a 15th to Thursday having a vote, they have to have their bills in print by the 12th. And that means they have to back up and have legislative counsel, the bill printers and formatters and legal counsel to the legislature, do all their work over this weekend. So that means that they really can't leave any time to have this discussion drag into next week. Whereas they used to have more time, then they could just put together bills and slap them together, and then they'd go through the process. So it's a different dynamic in terms of the timelines, because I think one of the concerns would be is if they don't follow the law, that someone litigates that the actual budget bill has been illegally passed. I think they're being keenly aware of
of the process that they have to do. So understand that nothing has happened for a while. There's a few actions taken. I'll go over them. But in terms of our area, but overall budget process, it's been very quiet, but it's going to happen quickly, and they're going to have to craft the budget. I think that this governor had very few vetoes over the last 2 years. We're probably hoping to see again. It depends on how much the legislature wants to flex their muscle and put in dollars that the governor will ultimately blue pencil. So in terms of our areas, there weren't that many. There was an issue with a budget change proposal that came to out in the budget for language access and the staff to oversee the VRI, issue with statewide e-filing, and more so an issue of ADA compliance with our vendors and whether or not our e-filing vendors will adhere to state and federal law on ADA. There were a couple of issues as it relates to our facilities, Sacramento, San Diego, and Siskiyou, but those are some of it is partly due with the trial court security and the concern of the legislature of spending more money, sheriff's world, and the fact that some of our new facilities are generating costs and their concern there of a greater cost in that area. There are some issues with the San Diego and has some desire to possibly limit the use of the building. Mike is shaking his head. It's just going to become a political issue. In terms of some critical issues that for the legislature, they added money in court reporters and they added money in equal access. There are differing amounts for both of those. So those are before conference. The only action that they had taken thus far was adopting some language on the e-filing to have a two-year plan for us to become in compliance with your state and federal ADA requirements. A lot of work with disability rights folks and our vendors in the world to try and craft something that would work for the branch, which we've done. So things that are not in conference is because there's no difference. So they've deemed them to be in agreement and not necessary to deliberate. So you won't see things like driver's license hold in there. You won't see things like dependency counsel in there. Those were essentially agreed to by the houses, and so they're in both versions of the bill. But so I know that those are critical issues for us. Another piece of the trailer bill, and this is where we talk about, you know, we try to track all the things that are apparent to us in front of us as far as the judicial branch, but there's a piece of trailer bill in the Department of State Hospitals as it relates to incompetent to stand trial. And we've had to mobilize our judges. And
what is it?
It's a creation of a new program that we thought had some concern about who is able to refer. And we worked through with the Department of State Hospitals that the administration's proposal. We didn't have the same issues that we thought we were going to have. But unfortunately, they adopted the assembly version, which was an LAO recommendation, to give even more authority to the Department of State Hospitals to make referrals. We've expressed our opposition to the legislatures and the staffers on it. We've been in communication with Judge Bianco about this, because I know that's been a big issue down in LA. But again, it's these things that are non-budget in our area that all of a sudden we have to make sure we're tracking. And this was one that did come up. But
would that be an example, Glossel, that the branch would be willing to say, that's a great bill, when it's funded, we'll handle those mental competencies? Because there is constitutional requirement that if it's state mandated, they fund it? At what
for
point are we at?
Cities and counties, not for the judicial branch, unfortunately. In this case, this impacts judicial discretion for the placement, as opposed to creating a new workload. It's taking away the judges. Yeah, where they could place folks.
So
but
you don't think it'll increase the number?
I, the fact that it's actually in some ways taking away workload from us, which is our concern, is that judges know the treatment situations. They didn't. Ms. Bianco is
taking away their options.
Yeah, and judicial discretion. So, anyways, it's again, these are just things that as we go through the budget process that we're tracking, even if it's not been on our, it was in a totally different budget committee and that sort of thing. So, we're tracking as much as we can, and things can happen fast, and that's why I want to make sure that I'm, you know, observing what's going on there and having touching base with finance and the consultants that if something is being talked about in the corner, that we walk over and you know, put our ear into it. Because as it stands now, given the speed at which this all has to happen, they don't have the luxury of getting all the input. And so we got to make sure we're ready there to provide it as it happens.
So can I ask you two more questions?
Sure.
What do you think the chances are that we'll get the $22 million in dependency funding? Because I think you mentioned there was no funding stream identified.
Yeah, and the last year when they did the Dependency Council, they did court reporters and equal access, the assembly had identified one-time money that they were taking out of the budget that the governor wanted as the way to fund it. This year they haven't made any specific comment on where it's coming. They're saying that their budget is balanced, that between their borrowing and their revenues, that they are different than the governor, that they can afford this and hundreds of millions of dollars of other expenditures. But as far as it's sticking in the budget, it's not a difference. So the equal access was, you know, funds to the state bar. Senate was at $30 million and the assembly was at $10 million. Pretty big difference. Last year, when they were at similar numbers, the governor beat them down to a one-time $5 million augmentation. Not large. We got no dependency funding, and we got no court reporters, which was also just on one side. Whereas this year, again, it's in the assembly at $15 million for court reporters and nothing in the Senate side. But as far as sort of, you know, if any of this was going to stick, I would say dependency council has been, you know, and I'd say we appreciate the other investments and certainly, but as far as what's been seen as a chief priority, dependency council is there. The advocates have been walking the halls. They've even brought in more lobbyists. I learned a couple of more lobbyists were brought in to really walk the halls and push for dependency council. So if anything's going to stick, oh, and the fact that the legislators have made specific reference to the fault of last year's budget of not including the $22 million, then it was $29 million for Dependency Council. That not being the budget is a major failure of the budget. So I can't imagine that that would be something that wouldn't be there until the very end if it was.
So my second question is related to the driver's license elimination. So the there's been a commitment that they would backfill the potential revenue loss to the brand.
Uh-huh.
And so if the budget or the bills pass and eliminate license holds, which will significantly restrict our collections, which means there will be a hold, how would that work exactly? So I'm just kind of just playing this out loud. Uh-huh. So it becomes effective July 1. We then work on how we're going to determine the amount of revenue that's lost and negotiate back and forth with the Department of Finance to get an amount. When do we think we would know what that is? Because in the meantime,
sure,
the courts have holds from January 1 forward, and we're going to hear very late if
yeah,
the hold isn't still
no, from a current year budget, I mean, that's part of, you know, our impressing upon them is that we need to have assurances that there's a process for that to happen as to communicate to you all that, you know, what is the value of the backfill. I would expect it to be no later than January when they would tell us, which is, I know, is late because that's when the budget would come out. But we would be pushing to have us be able to communicate to what level of backfill you could have. I mean, there are bills, the actual process is there are supplemental appropriations bills, there are, you know, there are legislative mechanisms to get the appropriation. It's when do we start telling you, yes, you will have 50 cents, 75 cents, 100 cents on the dollar of the backfills? Is how soon, and that's part of our conversation with them, is we need to know early, otherwise folks are going to start taking actions that are going to have harm, which is not what you wanted us to do.
So may I make a suggestion that once we know more about the driver's license holds and if they do go away, we should probably communicate with the CEOs to let them know that in planning your budget, there is a chance that, I mean,
mm-hmm,
I just am concerned that people are going to continue to operate at the same level.
Indeed.
And come January, they're going to have a big hole that will make them take immediate action to try to balance their budget by the end of the year. So there should be some communication.
Yeah, early.
And the MOE offset will be a $48 million hole right away. I mean, just mm-hmm. have to keep that in mind.
Probably our compelling numbers. Did you, was your intention to harm the branch? If it's not, then you need to make sure that there's the backstops there for us.
So I mean, tagging on to what Sherry said, would it be fruitful for us to, in that process, now just rehearsing all of the words that perhaps thinking about it and start putting together some numbers of what happened before amnesty, let's say, and that way, I mean, the initial discussions that we're going to have with the Department of Finance will be, what do you have? You know, and then we're going to maybe lose a few months of time where we can start working on that right now, just so that we can start the conversation.
I mean, I've already had the conversation about what are the data points, what's the process that you want us to provide you. They haven't given us much specific feedback. They said, but we are committed. So, you know, our interest is in having that conversation not start, you know, after the budget's done. But I've already had, you know, preliminary conversations with them. But, you know, this is on the work plan for the summer. But in terms of internal communication, I mean, hopefully when people have been on the phone calls about the budget, we've talked about the revenue implications.
Yeah, and I think it would be helpful just to be on the same page.
Yeah, and you know what? And I'll say this is, and we make a point then in our budget memo and on our post-budget calls. That would be one way because we've had very good responsiveness in terms of, you know, over 150 people on those calls, is that we make a point about that to say, be cautious. Yes, there's this commitment. How deep? How wide? So, you know, there's some fiscal uncertainty, as with anything, but definitely make that point.
Can I circle back on something you said earlier? You touched upon it briefly on the court reporter will access. I can tell from your response. Is your enthusiasm less so with respect to that?
I would say it's dependency counsel, equal access, and court reporters in terms of, especially since dependency counsel was in both sides and not a difference. Equal access was in both sides with a difference. And then court reporters was only on one side. So just from the actions and the differences, you would, that's how you handicap it. I mean, it's not for lack of, I mean, you know, there's been folks, you know, we've talked about even at the full committee when these issues came up, you know, about supporting them. Even if they're not, you know, as it relates to the equal access and the court reporters, they weren't part of our official advocacy and ask, but, you know, at this point, you're getting all you can.
I find it. Do you have a question?
No, it's just a question about the court report, court report we're talking about.
So this is obviously a discussion item, not an action item. Any other questions for Zlatko before he has to depart and we break for lunch? Okay, thank you very much for that. It's bordering on 12:30, so what I'm going to ask is that we take half an hour for lunch, and to give you a few minutes lead, sway within that, let's make every effort to be back at 1 o'clock. That's plenty of discussion time. We'll start at 1. We've moved the agenda item up, so we've arranged to have Anna Maves available earlier. She'll be available at 1. That discussion should take – is lunch here? Lunch is here. So that'll take about 20 minutes, I think. My goal is to get us out of here by 1:30 instead of 2, but we'll go to 2 if we need to. So, but let's make a point to be able to start promptly back at 1 o'clock. For those of you on the call, we'll be going back on at 1 o'clock. Thank you.
Thank you.
help us with that, but I'm going to take us back on. So we are now recording once again. And for those that just joined the conversation, we're moving to information item two, the last item on our agenda before our general discussion, AB 1058 funding update. Anna, thank you so much.
Sure,
and it's yours.
Thank you very much for asking me to be here. I want, just as a way of background, the Judicial Council formed a joint subcommittee comprised of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee, and the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee to review funding for the AB 1058 program. Before February last year, the Joint Subcommittee made a recommendation, went through the three advisory committees, went to the Council in February, and in February the Council reestablished the Joint Subcommittee. Asked that the Joint Subcommittee make a recommendation based on a workload methodology for implementation for fiscal year 18-19, determine whether they can make a separate workload-based determination for the Child Support Commissioners versus the Family Law Facilitators who had previously been combined, work with State DCFS on their funding reallocation methodology to see if we can work together on that, and to establish some subject matter expert work groups, the Child Support Commissioner work group and the Family Law Facilitator subject matter work groups to report back to the Joint Subcommittee on some uniqueness within the program that should be incorporated into any kind of a funding methodology. So since the Joint Subcommittee has been reestablished, they've had four separate meetings. The last meeting was on May 11th, and at that meeting, a consultant from named Dan Bauer, who DCFS had hired to help provide information for a funding methodology, made a presentation. He talked about the work that he's done in helping to make recommendation on four different funding models. He worked with the, during his presentation, he indicated that he worked with the subject matter expert Family Law Facilitator Group and the Child Support Commissioner subject matter group to gather information from them on within the program that helped determine the amount of work that's done and if the uniqueness for each of them. He conducted some Delphi groups with those two groups to ask them about durational time and whatever factors that they could identify that increased their workload. Both of the Family Law Facilitator and the Child Support Commissioner had both indicated that two of the factors that they thought were really influential on their workload were the level of poverty within their caseload and English as a second language within the caseload really impacted their workload. So in addition to conducting these Delphi groups with the subject matter experts, he also conducted four time studies with four individual courts over a month period and asked them to report on all the work they did for the program. So the four courts that participated were Los Angeles County, Sacramento County, Ventura County, and Yolo County, and they provided information, and that was critical for him to make determinations about duration. Not only duration, but also the types of work. So the majority of the work that courts were performing, and then how long it was for the courts to do that work. He presented that he reviewed a lot of the data options that were available, and that there were some issues with all of the data that was available to review. He, based on his conversations with the commissioners and facilitators, he thought that motions was really the determining factor for workload, and unfortunately through the GPSA system, motions is a voluntary field, so it's not a mandatory field that is being captured uniformly statewide. And with regard to the DCFS data
that he was able to pull. The motion data was all data that was initiated by the local child support agency, so it wasn't capturing the motions that were filed by the litigants other than DCFS uniformly. So that was some of the issues with the data that he found when he was collecting that. So based on all of the information that he's gathered from working with the subject matter expert groups, working with the courts, looking at the DCSS data, looking at what data was available to the branch, he made four recommended potential funding models. The first model was essentially based on a WAFM model, which estimates staffing need for each court by multiplying the number of motions by the duration estimate and uses the WAFM formula to determine the allocation. The second model that he recommended for review was to use the same staffing estimates as in the first model, but use average salaries in each individual court to calculate the allocation rather than a statewide average salary, which is adjusted by regional cost of labor for the Bureau of Labor Statistics metric, as in WAFM. The third model is the same model as model number two, but it would also allow some discretion for the judicial council. So if a court had an individual need, if there was, some specific difference within a court, they could make a petition for additional funding for that. And the fourth model was based on a model office. So it estimates staffing by dividing the total number of hearings by the number of hearings each staff member is assumed to be able to handle. So it would then fund based on a minimum number of staffing to perform functions. So each model that he suggested additionally increased the staffing, the number of residents in the county who live in impoverished circumstances or have limited English proficiency. He also suggested that there be a floor, but in addition to that, he also suggested there be a strata. So there would be, in his suggestion, five individual stratas that courts would be clustered into to keep the funding in those stratas level. So, in addition to the work that was done by Dan at that meeting, the Family Law Facilitator chair of the Family Law Facilitator TME group and the chair of the Child Support Commissioners TME group made their report back to the Joint Subcommittee on all the meetings that they had conducted and the work that they had done, and made some recommendations that included looking at, as the commissioners requested that the Joint Subcommittee look at motions as a determination workload. They indicated the need for a floor. The facilitators requested that the Family Law Facilitator database that's maintained at the Judicial Council, the Family Law Facilitators input information about the work that they're providing be used as their basis for determining, or their data for determining their workload. They also indicated some of the factors that Dan did about impoverished people in English as a second language contributing to their increasing the amount of workload that they had. So at the end of that meeting, the Joint Subcommittee just kind of took in all of that information. It was a lot of information, but ultimately the Joint Subcommittee's determination of what to do next. So what the Joint Subcommittee's plan is moving forward is to have a meeting in July to now talk about each of these models or any other models, talk about what they like in one model, talk about what they don't like in another model, and come up with what they think would be a good model to move forward, and also to talk about what the data that is available to it and determine what data is available, what would best capture the workload for each of the facilitators and the commissioners to plug into a model, and then maybe even make recommendations about what to capture moving forward now that we want to capture, know we're capturing workload as a measure and want to do that uniformly statewide.
We'll schedule a second meeting if necessary, if that meeting doesn't cover everything, but the plan then is in the first week of October to have a final in-person meeting to plug in all the data to the models, maybe multiple models, maybe get multiple data sources at what best represents the workload and make an ultimate recommendation that would go back to then each of the advisory committees before it moved on to the council with a expectation to go to the council by January.
And Anna, the material in the handout, the PowerPoint from that presentation.
Correct. Right. Yes, the PowerPoint was included in your materials, and then also on the trial court budget advisory committee page is the subject matter expert reports as well that are accessible to you as well.
Questions?
So I don't. I'm not disagreeing. I just don't understand how poverty can increase workload. Could you help me understand how they feel that increases workload?
Sure. So what Dan's study suggested was that people that are living in poverty have less access to resources, so it's more difficult for them to get to and from the court. If they're less educated, sometimes they have drug dependency issues. So all of these kind of subset of people are included within the poverty definition, and then working with those people takes longer for them. Working with the facilitators, going more slowly, having to explain everything, also working at a hearing, the commissioner takes longer for them to work through to make sure they're understanding.
So you had me at the lack of education, but if they're having challenges getting to the courthouse, it would actually reduce your workload.
Well, it,
so, you know,
potentially, if you're scheduling a hearing, they're not showing up, or they're scheduling that, you know, you might save a slot for them, and now they're not there, that kind of thing.
But that's not workload if they're not there.
Well, if you saved a spot for them.
But saving a spot and doing the work. So different debate. I'm really glad to see that they're looking at motions. I thought that was good. I thought some of the work that they're doing is really good. And so for me, when the final recommendation is ready, then there will be a report to trial court budget as well as Sam Jube, and then each committee will
and workload assessment.
Yeah.
So it goes back to each committee that has members on the joint committee.
Correct. We've had that experience before.
Yes.
We'll get
three to
play, Sherry.
What's that?
We'll get three to.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, okay.
When we dealt with this a year or so ago, we learned there was a DCFS resource allocation study ongoing. And do we know anything about that and where it is in process and how they measure or assess workload?
So, I don't know historically what they've done to measure their, how they've allocated their funding historically. They went through this process. They got a group together. They looked at that. It was anticipated they were going to roll something out. When the numbers came out, they were pretty bad. There were huge swings of funding from court or from local child support agencies to another. And what the local child support agency directors were saying is, really, there's not enough funding. You're moving money around, but you're taking money away. You're not proving I don't need money. You're only proving that this other county needs money more additional. So they decided to stall that practice. And part of what the consultant's been doing in gathering this data is being able to develop a pitch to go to the legislature and ask for additional funding. The whole program has been flat funded since 2008. And so and the investment that the legislature and the state has to make is only the 34% of the funding that the federal drawdown 66%, and there's no cap right now on how much a state can ask for. It influences the performance measures of cost effectiveness is one of the performance measures that DCFS worries about, so they certainly want to keep things cost effective, but if they can go back to the legislature and make a pitch to put in a dollar and pull down two additional dollars, that's the hope for the program statewide, which would include the branch.
Any other questions or concerns about Jake?
So, Department Chair, are you, they settle
on not using hearings as the base? Are getting motions instead, or are they both?
So what they, nothing's been said about, right? It was only a report from the consultant to the joint subcommittee. That'll be one of the questions now for the first meeting is, what do you want to look at? If you want to look at motions, here's limitations looking at motions. If you want to look at filings, here's the limitation looking at filings. If you want to look at hearings, here's the limitation looking at. So it's that kind of a discussion I think the joint subcommittee is going to have the very first meeting, understanding where there is a gap in the data right now and where data could be subject to manipulation, I think. So you want to make it so that the data that you collect is everybody's, you know, calling apples apples, everybody's reporting it the same way, and that it's not subject to a manipulation, I think, is a really important goal.
I would just, not just about manipulation, right? So you also don't want to reward continuances. So count, in particular, so counting number of hearings rewards not completing it.
Inefficiency.
As long as that's part of the discussion too, not just about what data is available and how you manipulate it, but what you also, what you measure, what happens, right? So if you're just going to count hearings.
Judge Kaufman.
So what just I understand, the consultant from Actionist is hired by DCSS, correct?
Correct.
It's not hired by the branch.
Correct.
And that person is making a recommendation to various groups?
So they are hired by DCSS to make a recommendation to DCSS, but also as part of their charge was to report back to the joint subcommittee on the information they gathered.
And then basically the branch is funded, DCSS gets a grant from Fed and gives us to the branch.
Correct.
And how is that money, and then they have a right to allocate how the money is allocated?
No. They
give us a lump sum?
Correct. They give a lump sum for the commissioner's side of the program and a lump sum for the facilitator's side of the program.
And we decide how we divide it up.
The council then allocates to that. Yeah.
Other questions? Comments? All right. Anna, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Okay, we are well ahead of time, but I did ask that about 15, 20 minutes be built into the agenda for general discussion items. This is an open meeting. We're still on. But any general concerns, or I thought we had a very productive and appropriate discussion this morning concerning all the items, most particularly the work plan. I appreciate everybody's candor and suggestions, but more broadly, any concerns, thoughts, anything else you want to include before we conclude? Wow. Okay. Judge Herman just stepped out, but he did ask me to make an inquiry, though it might be changing right now. Apparently his connection, he flies from Sacramento to San Francisco to Santa Barbara, and he just got word that they've canceled his connection from Sacramento to San Francisco. So he said if there's anybody going that way, okay, David, I'll let you hook up with him. I'm sure he'll appreciate that, but maybe he's making other arrangements. Anybody else need a ride? Everything good? All right. Appreciate everybody coming into the room. This is always productive. Our next scheduled in-person meeting?
August 8th.
August 8th.
Location to be determined.
Location to be determined. I'm taking Judge Herman. Mr. Yamasaki can assist you. Okay. Thanks, everybody. Please travel safe. Have a happy 4th, and we'll be in touch. Thank you.
Thank you.
The host has left the meeting. So at this time, the meeting will come to an end. Thank you. And goodbye.